Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Albert Brooks.
Thank you. Hello, and congratulations on your purchase. This fine recording is a combination of material. Some recorded live at the Troubadour in Los Angeles, some recorded elsewhere. The last part of this album is called Comedy Minus One, and this is where you have the chance to become the comedian, or comedienne, and get the laughs. But more about that later. I would like to say that during the live portion of this record, no laughter has been altered in any way, shape, or form. As a matter of fact, I have with me here a notary public who will swear to this fact. You're a notary public.
Yes.
And you swear to this fact.
Sure.
Well, that's just about it. Oh, yes. When you hear the yodel, you turn the record over. So, without wasting any more time, let's go now to the Troubadour. Well, wait. Let's waste just a little more time. Fine. Let's go now to the Troubadour. We join me in progress.
Cole Stratton's here with me.
Hello.
And you wanted to do another Albert Brooks album.
Yep. So if you have on a third time, I'll have nothing else to go from. Since he's only done two.
That's really sad.
I know. And it's both pretty great.
They're both like kind of groundbreaking, or at least in my experience. Because yeah. I've never heard anything like them before.
They're pretty unique.
They're both, I mean, the first one you wouldn't necessarily call interactive, but there's a lot of him breaking the fourth wall for your benefit.
Constantly, yeah.
And in this one, you literally get to play along.
Yep, you really do.
It's so good. And I guess it was a parody of a type of album that existed for a while, which I've never seen,
yeah.
called Co-Star Records, where yep. you would just do scenes with people.
Yep. Everything's pre-recorded, and they leave spaces for you to put in your lines. And that's kind of what's cool about this record is, like, the first half's very traditional. Like, side one is, like, a stand-up set. But then side two is very different, because then it's kind of... Yeah, it totally changes. You have the one good bit, which is the rewriting of the national anthem bit, which I think is brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
You have kooky crazy calls, which are really silly and stupid. And then this long 12-minute bit at the end, which is called Comedy Minus One, which is also the name of the record, where literally it's like this comedy routine that you do where Albert's being the straight man, you're the funny mechanic, and they leave a bunch of spaces, and then George Jessel makes an appearance, too. It's debatable whether the actual scene is funny, because
right.
it kind of isn't.
Right.
But, I mean, it sort of is, but I think mm-hmm. that's sort of the point. Like, it's kind of a hacky bit, mm-hmm. and then... But it gives you a chance to, like, try to figure out timing, comedic timing, that mm-hmm. kind of stuff. And when I was a kid... When I was like 12 or whatever, and this guy introduced me, I would do it all the time.
Really?
Like, yeah. Oh yeah. I would like try to get the timing right, and mm-hmm. I had a recording at some point of me doing it when I was like 12, but I have no idea where that is, which would have been rad.
Mm-hmm.
But in the back of the record, there's a mirror on it that says like "and you," which is replicated in the CD liner too. So it says like "you"
awesome.
Script inside. So there's like a little thing where you can see your own face. So
it's so good.
It's pretty great.
And it's this sort of pre-irony thing that, like, while he's poking fun, there's something, like, delightfully sincere about the whole thing.
Yep. It's great when you can, like, send something up and pay, like, do it at the same time.
That's yeah.
really, that's hard to do.
It is. It is. And it is, I like that he treats it like this is, I think he introduces it as the classic bit, even though I don't think anybody's ever heard it before. Even though
right.
it's the classic format. And I don't know, listening through, like I said, I was listening to it at work and going through it, and I didn't get to... I think if I'd said it out loud, I would have gotten a different sense of the timing, which I think is funny, because listening along and trying to read along at work quietly doesn't really work.
Yeah, what I figured out with it is you have more time than you think you do.
Yeah.
For anything that's more than one sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you just kind of milk words, especially at the end, so
mm-hmm.
that way there's not, like, words, and then there's a space, and then you're
right.
like, ah. So you kind of figure that out. So
yeah.
It's kind of funny.
Oh, it's so good. Do you have... Okay, so, obviously, let's talk about the national anthem bit, which is
yep.
actually really funny. I mean, I honestly, at some point, was wondering on the first side, is he going to screw with us? And I think he does a little bit, but, you know, the bit itself is all legit. It's all actually recorded live. But you like the national anthem piece.
Yeah, he's done it, like, I think on the Flip Wilson show and some
okay.
other stuff, too. And I think he probably recorded it at the same time he did the Troubadour stand-up recording
mm-hmm.
on the first half. And even on the first half, it's like, he can't just let it go straight through. He not constantly, but periodically interrupts it with weird things. Like, he interviews some lady on the street being like, hey, what do you think of the record so far?
I love that.
Oh, I think it's great. I think it's really commercial. Do you think it'll sell? Yeah, I think it'll do great. Like, why? I don't know. And like a yodeler interrupts too soon, which is supposed to be like, you're at the end of the album, end of the side. And he's like, not yet. And keeps going. So he always like, whenever it starts to settle into something traditional, he's like, nope, nope, it can't be. And then, you know, does something to screw with you. But the national anthem bit is just like a really good, solid comedic conceit.
Yeah.
Where literally it's like, hey, why is the Star Spangled Banner our national anthem? Like, couldn't we get somebody else to write something better and new or whatever? So the idea is that it's a bunch of auditions for people, like anybody, being able to come up and do their version of the national anthem, give them a piano, let them sound good, see what they can do with it. And then he plays all the different characters. And the piano work's also really good. Yeah. So it's like a big character in it, in a sense, too, because the tone of whatever he starts playing is, it really informs what the character is going to be doing their version of it.
And the Vegas guy I really like, because I didn't think, it seemed like it was too played out, but now he milks that for everything.
Yep.
Did you hear this one before or after A Star Is Born?
I think before. I think this was my first Albert thing, because this my dad had, and then A Star Is Bought I had to like hunt down after the fact, because that one's really hard to find, even more hard to find than this one is. So yeah, when I was a kid, this is the one I came up on. But when I was a kid, the first half didn't hold much for me. You know, like, it's really funny now, and you listen to him opening for Richie Valens. That whole story is great. Yeah. But when you're 12, it's like, eh, whatever, because it's not. It's more storytelling stand-up versus like jokes set up, whatever. So it was side two is what I listened to a lot, because I love the national anthem bit, and I love the comedy minus you bit. So that's the side I listen to.
I have to feel like there've got to be some people who would have trouble re-listening to this over and over again, which is kind of... But, I mean, for a kid, I guess it's perfect. For somebody that age, it's got to be perfect. Because you're going to still play along with it.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you listen to that bit, you'd just be like, oh, it's funny, whatever. Trying to play around with the timing or whatever, but, you know, in one ear, out the other.
Yes.
But, I mean, the idea is pretty great, and I can't think of anybody else who's really done it. Mm-hmm. But... yeah, it's not something that holds up. Or you could listen to National Anthem a lot, because that bit's just really funny, and you can play it for other people. It's timeless, considering when it came out in the late 70s or whatever. It still holds up pretty great.
Do you think, and this is all going to be conjecture, but do you think the reason he didn't go on is just, well, I've got a movie career now? Because it just feels like he could have done more. He obviously didn't have to.
Yeah, I kind of feel with Albert... everything's like, oh, I can't be bothered. Like, I kind of feel like that's his thing. Like, oh, I did that. Yeah. Again. Oh, no. Like, that's the kind of vibe I get from him.
Yeah.
Even in his movie career, it's the same kind of way. But I think possibly, like, he's always kind of, like, he did the early SNL bits, videos, and even those, like, you know, eventually kind of turned them upon themselves and got out of that. So I don't think he likes to do anything for very long, you know? So it'd be cool to see if he would revisit something like that now.
Yeah.
I don't know if he ever would, but that would be cool.
Because, everybody treating the podcast like it's a new comedy album, I do definitely appreciate it. But the time somebody like him could spend putting another album together would be kind of fantastic.
Yeah.
If he had any interest.
I mean, he's only done, I think he's done like one podcast even. And
really? I didn't know he'd done anything.
I think he did WTF. Okay, of course. I want to say, and that's it.
Yeah.
And I know people that know him who have asked him, and he's like, I don't want to talk about me.
Yeah.
Like, that's just the kind of way he is.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I think he's always been a reluctant star in a lot of ways, too. But he's a very naturally funny person, so...
Which, I guess that makes sense that he would do an album like this, then. It's about you. I'm a funny guy, but he literally makes half of an album about the audience, which is kind of awesome.
It's pretty amazing, yeah.
So, between these two, do you prefer one album or no? Because they're kind of like an art piece, if you put them together.
Yeah, I mean... as a full album, I think I prefer Star Is Bought because it's just bit after bit after bit after bit. Mm-hmm. And I'm more of a fan of bit than stand-up.
Sure.
You know? Like, I like stand-up, but, like, I prefer bits. So, like, sketch records are great. You know, people finally do those. Like, those Adam Sandler early records are actually pretty fun. Things like that, where it's a little less about, like, nowadays people put a comedy album out. It's just them on stage somewhere for an hour.
Right.
And that's it. Which is fine. That's great. But I prefer things where they took a little time to kind of write stuff or put sound effects in or get guests in to do the other bit parts and stuff. I just think that's more fun. So yeah, I think I prefer Star's Butt to this one overall, but like National Anthem is probably my favorite bit on either of those.
Yeah.
So it's hard to like...
I mean, at least there's a lot of production value to that live bit. I mean, the music adds so much and the character voices are fucking fantastic.
Totally.
And then again, these are not things that I think of when I think of Albert Brooks, which is also one really good reason to listen to these, because people don't even think of him as a stand-up. You know, they think of him as Albert Brooks, the movie guy.
Yep, know? As a neurotic movie comedian. And that's kind of his thing. Mm-hmm. So it is kind of interesting to hear him do, you know, 30 minutes of stand-up.
Sure.
Because you don't really ever think of him as that, or at least it's not out there. There's not like, oh, if I just downloaded another Albert Brooks stand-up special. Right. Like, that just doesn't exist.
No. Is there anybody that's put together, maybe we talked about this last time, but anybody that's put together a well-produced, like, sketch album in the last 10 years that you can think of that's...
Not that I can think of. I mean, there's that State sketch record that never got released that they recorded drunkenly in Hawaii over, like, a week.
Right.
Which, you know, I've got a hold of, like, a year or two ago, and it's got some bits that are really funny and some bits that are just obviously very sloppy and not well thought out. I don't know. I think it's because... I feel like now someone really could do it, and I think there's podcasts that do it, like Super Ego, things like that, even though that's largely improvised and then cut down.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's a way that you could do that kind of stuff. I was always thinking about doing, like, kind of a side podcast to my Pop My Culture that was more of a sketch podcast that I would release, you know, once or twice a year or something like that.
Yeah.
I'd cobble it together and then put them out or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So I've done a few sketches, you know, on GarageBand, which is recording all the different voices and putting in some sound effects or whatever.
Right.
But I just haven't done anything with them yet. Because I just thought it'd be cool to kind of bring back the sketch record.
Agreed.
Because it's just not really happening.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, nowadays you can put anything up as a download and whatever. And, you know, I don't think it would ever get pressed in any way, shape, or form.
No.
But I can't think of anybody who's really doing that.
It's getting worse. I mean, there are buildings that are... There's no building large enough now, it seems. A Three Dog Night just passed a law within their group, starting, I think, in 2 months. They will play no more buildings of any kind. They will just play States and do 30, 32 concerts a year, stand in the middle of Kentucky and play, and everyone pays that day. Appearing in Kentucky, Three Dog Night! Liar, 850. I'm just going to Dayton. You heard it, you pay it. What could the ultimate of that be? They get on a jet plane in New York and fly to Los Angeles and play in the plane, let the military promote the concert, and have everyone in the country pay a dollar. Excuse me, you two. See that plane?
Yes, we do.
$2. Let me treat you, honey.
No, and do you, out of curiosity, do you source your sound effects elsewhere, or do you put them together yourself? Because I was talking to Matt Gorley about this the other day, and I was curious.
Yeah, sometimes I'll record something myself if it makes sense and I think I can pull it off. Otherwise, I just try to find them online. You can find almost anything online nowadays. True. Or find something that you think will double for it. Because, I mean, there's always all these stories about movies where, like, in Revenge of the Nerds, Booger's burp isn't a burp. It's a camel climaxing, which is totally true.
Oh, my God.
So people would always source different sound effects. They're like, oh, that sounds like a belch.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll put it in like that, so... Yeah, there's some pretty amazing, like, soundboards online, too.
Sure.
Like, we did this improv show where it's, like, a 90s sitcom.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just had this soundboard that had different audiences, noises and effects. And, like, applause, laughter, ooh, like, that kind of stuff. And so
awesome.
We just had it in the sound booth, and we would just tell the guy out there, like, just go to town, dude. Whenever one of us says something, you could be like, uh-oh, you know, like, one of those things. And we'll just react to it like it's Friends or something.
That's fantastic.
And those things are, I don't know who puts them up, but they're there, you know. Somebody sourced them and put it in a little way that you can just press a mouse click on that thing and have it start and stop when you unclick it.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's not
bad. I didn't know that existed.
Does Gorley and those guys, do they source theirs elsewhere?
Both. They do both. Like, he was telling me that one of the sketches he did, I can't remember what character or what person they needed to be getting in and out of a bath. He said, I just went in naked to a bath, recorded myself taking a bath, and then didn't stop it. Like,
I can't believe that they use that James Bond music and get away with it.
I know.
that kills me. I was like, that's totally Bond.
Right. Yeah.
And yeah, we just, okay.
That is one reason, though, why I think it would be harder for people, because... I mean, I guess you could just go ahead and make all your sound effects, which is how I do it, but, like, I just have always wondered, like, that's one thing we take for granted in the digital era, that we can get whatever we want.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, like, music's harder. Like, I think if you have a sound effect of, like, doing or something like that, someone's not going to be able to isolate that out of your track. And,
yeah.
Unless, maybe they could, but I doubt it, and hunt you down and be like, you owe me 55 cents for that spring sound effect. I don't think it's going to happen. But if it's a piece of music you're using, not something you're selling in any way, shape, or form, I could see that being very sticky, very fast.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes it rough. The other thing is putting together 45 minutes of solid sketch material that works in audio, because people, I don't think, are thinking that way anymore.
Yeah, it's like some people will take like some live sketches that they've done that sort of could work that way and like do them, and then you're like, well, that still doesn't work. There's a visual gag there I definitely couldn't see. Because I had a sketch group for many years called Totally False People, and there's some of those sketches that would work very well. And one or two that I took and tried to translate them into audio sketches, and they work pretty well for the most part. But a good portion of our stuff had visual gags in them.
Of course.
So it's like, how do you do that? Do you rewrite it?
Right.
Or just let it go into the darkness? But the nice thing about an audio sketch is you can really accomplish anything, because you can put yourself in, do a scene in space and have it sound sort of all right, whereas you couldn't really do that on stage and have it not look really stupid. So
do you have... Okay, so let's if we can get into it a little more. I don't want to know the specifics of your sketches. None of my business. But, I mean, do you have an idea for something that could be, like, a full album? Or are you just writing them as you go?
Yeah, well, I had this idea for this, like, offshoot podcast I was going to call, like, 140 channels or something. And have it just be as if the listener's flipping through a TV dial or whatever. So you hear, like, channels changing, and then it pops on a sketch. And so that's one good way, if you don't have great endings for a sketch, that the channel will just end out of it when you want. So I thought about doing, like, that as the overall format. And then that way the sketches can be totally disparate. It wouldn't have to really be along a theme, you know? So I thought about something like that, or like, I mean, I always kind of wanted to do something with Vanessa that way, like do a sketch record, but she's, you know, just had a baby and is in Groundling Sunday Company and is very busy. So I've just learned that if you don't have to rely on anybody but yourself, you can get stuff done in a timely manner. So then, yeah, I thought about, like, trying to write something and then asking a lot of my, you know, kind of famous comedy friends if they'd pop on you know, hey, man, Paul F. Tompkins, will you read these 10 lines and email them to me or whatever? So that would be the idea if I ever just really focus on it. But I always just kind of, like, tinker on it in my spare time and just don't really make any real progress on it.
No, and I totally get that, because I'm kind of the same way with the album I'm writing. And I also keep thinking about, especially when I hear new albums like this that are just so experimental, is like, I don't know that there's any, I don't right now have, because I haven't cut an audio sketch in a long time, I don't have like the skill I used to have. I'm not playing games, I'm not experimenting anymore. Then a comedy album was a thing that everybody was doing, so you had heard them all and you knew what games to play and what things you might want to turn on their head, and I don't know if anybody's thinking that way either. It's all talking. Talky, talk, talk.
Yeah, I mean, most podcasts nowadays especially are just like, hey, chit-chatting about whatever, the end. And the production quality is very low, and there's no overhead really involved, so anybody can do it. And then a lot of the things just get released into a vacuum, and nobody ever really listens to them. But some do break through and that kind of stuff, too. But there are ones that are so super produced that I can't imagine the post on all those. I mean, for our podcast, Pop My Culture, we barely edit anything out. Like, we'll pull a few things out if somebody's like, hey, that story, I shouldn't have told that. I just said something vaguely racist. Let's pull that out or whatever. Otherwise, it's like 99% of what we just record is sitting around a table. And then we just pop on the theme song and then the outro song and upload it to iTunes and it's done. And, you know, that's it. There's a little bit of like graphics work for the episode release or whatever. But it's very minimal. But then there's things that, like, I believe the Dana Gould Hour, like, he works like crazy on his and tinkers with it and constantly changes it. And I was like, I can't imagine, you know, in this day and age where Nerdist is putting out 4 episodes a week, tinkering with one for a month. Like, that's crazy to me. But if I go for, like, a sketch thing, if I make it a podcast versus an album, then it's going to be that way for me, because I'll be tinkering with one episode forever. But then the expectation has to be that the next one's not coming for a while.
Right. And that seems to be death for most people, or at least that's the that's what people think. I don't know that that's true.
Yeah.
I mean, superego doesn't do it. They don't do it. I mean, they do it regularly, but not. I mean, when's the last time they had a season? I don't know that it was that recent. Right?
Been a while, yeah. And the new one's coming in September. Mm-hmm. And TFT joined full time, so that's cool.
That's great for them.
That's really great for them. Yeah, it was weird. It's like they were number one on iTunes, and it was like the 3 minute "We're coming back," and I was like, "God, good God, number one on the charts."
That's fantastic.
But yeah, the dilemma would be for me is like, do I make it as a podcast or do I just release it as a record and then hopefully charge something for that and make some money, or just put it out as a special, you know, biennial podcast that comes out twice a year or something and then make it free or make it 99 cents or $2 or something and see what happens.
Yeah.
But who knows?
Because that's the thing is like, I think I've reserved, I have just resigned myself to the fact that obviously, I mean, you know, our podcast doesn't have near the numbers yours does, but anybody right now would have difficulty making money on an album, a comedy album, making money on it.
For sure.
You know, you could get some of it back and maybe pay yourself for the amount of time you spent on it, maybe. But it's like the idea of profiting on comedy is a lot harder.
Yeah, well, the second you start to charge for anything, though, people suck. So they even suck when it's free, you know? Yeah. They still find things to complain about. Like, I can't believe you talked about that sponsor for 2 minutes. And it's like, okay, great. You want to pay for me hosting this thing?
Right.
Like, not hosting, but, like, literally putting it on the web where there's bandwidth and things that we have to pay for. But, you know, people are greedy nowadays because content is so free. I mean, that's why I think, like, Doug Benson's smart because, you know, he puts out all the Douglas movies for free but does special live episodes or whatever that are, like, $1 or $2. So, like, you get tons of free ones. So if you just want to go down that road, you can.
Sure.
But if you want to be a completist and get these other things, you'll be throwing a couple bucks his way.
Yeah.
To kind of help with everything else.
I mean, I guess that's the best way to do it. I keep also thinking about there's no fourth wall anymore because it's all talking right to the audience, or at least talking to a person in the room, and you're sort of treating the audience like they're your buddy.
Right.
So, I mean, not to say that people couldn't pretty quickly latch onto the idea of an audio sketch again, but I don't know that it's common. Do you think there's, like, a generation of kids who are just going to know podcasts and not know sketch that well?
Yeah, I mean, even thinking about mine, it's like, I would have to have an intro on it. Mm-hmm. That would be like, hey guys, Cole Stratton here, this is the thing, it's just a bunch of sketches, enjoy, or whatever. Like, literally, like, let me hold your hand into this.
Right.
So it doesn't start, and you're like, what is happening here? Like, I feel like that's what would have to happen nowadays. So
true.
I just did a panel at Comic-Con a couple of days ago that was like the Nerdist Podcast Super Panel. So it was like 8 of us from different shows. Matt Myra like moderated it, and it was like Jonah Ray, Janet Varney, Sex Nerd Sandra, Dave Ross, and then Gil, who hosts the Mutant Season, who's 11 years old.
Kid is hilarious.
Somehow, like, and this is going to get released as some sort of podcast or something. Like, Nerdist recorded it. Gil, somehow cassettes came up as a thing, and then they asked Gil, like, do you know what a cassette is? And he's like, no. And it became like this big joke. I was like, yeah, I mean, Gil's 11, he doesn't know what a cassette is,
right?
So, you know, any of these other people coming up, and he's a podcaster,
right?
And these people coming up, like, they're just gonna have no memory of it. And that's when I'm starting to feel like an old man, because like one day my kids will be like, What are these things? Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you mean DVD? You mean Blu-ray? You mean CD? You mean vinyl? You mean cassette? You mean single? Which one of these things that I have laying around?
Right.
Are you confused by all of them? Great.
We're in a department store in the Midwest, and your name is?
Mrs. Hansen.
Mrs. Hansen, you've been listening to this record here. What do you think of what you've heard so far?
I think it's funny. I think it's relevant. I think there's laughs for young and old alike. And
do you think it'll sell?
Oh, I think it'll sell very big. My family, I'm sure, would buy this.
How many in your family?
Well, I don't really have a family. That's just a figure of speech.
I see. I thank you very much for speaking with us.
Thank you.
Back to the record.
And I that's the thing is like that the ubiquity of media is good. I don't know. I don't want to be a harbinger of horrible, awful things. I don't want that to be a harbinger of bad things. But the ubiquity of media might kill it. I don't know. Might kill creating content that you spend a lot of time on.
Well, everything is going to the cloud, so to speak. Like, our apartments will be in the cloud soon. We won't actually live anywhere. We'll be floating beings. So, like, you know, our kids coming up are going to be like, why do you actually have this? Like, why is there a hard copy of Cool Runnings in here when I can just hit play on any of my devices and Cool Runnings will come up?
Yeah.
And it's just the idea of like, well, I'm from the collecting generation where it was considered great to be able to walk into your den and pull it out and yes. put it in a player and have it to watch anytime you want.
Mm-hmm.
So now, like, they've just eliminated the tactile middleman who actually makes something you can hold in your hand
mm-hmm.
to now put it on a screen that you just look it up, type in four letters, find it, and hit play.
Yeah.
Like, that's going to be the difference. And I think a lot of things are going to disappear because not everything is going to be put online.
Sure.
So you're not going to, at some point, like that weird culty movie you like that no one else does.
I know.
If you didn't buy it tactily, you'll never be able to see it again.
Yeah, because I actually wonder what the ratio, too, of films made versus films that went to VHS and then films that went to DVD, because it has to have been a pretty chunky, you know, reduction of...
Yeah. Well, there's one thing nice that, like, Warner Archive does, which is, mm-hmm. like, it's kind of made-to-order DVDs.
Oh, yeah, right.
So, like, they don't have to do a massive printing, a massive pressing of them. They'll mm-hmm. just be like, oh, yeah, I want to order Amazing Grace and Chuck, and then they just print it right then and there and send it to you.
Yeah.
So they have the file digitally somewhere and just do that.
Okay.
So at least there's that kind of thing, because yeah. and that's just a response to them like not wanting to press things anymore
yeah.
because no one buys them. Like, it's fallen right. off so hardcore.
Yeah.
And there's not really brick and mortar stores anymore that sell that kind of stuff. It's mm-hmm. even that stuff is just like through Amazon or whatever. These places can't stay in business
right.
and pay rent and have those things on there.
Mm-hmm.
Some secondhand stores, but very few of those are even left. So
right.
it's a weird time where it's all changing. And, you know, I have like 2,000 DVDs and like 500 Blu-rays and stuff like that too. So, like, for me, it's going to be weird 10 years from now or whatever when no one's going to want to touch these. Mm-hmm. I won't be able to unload them. And then it'll be like, why do I have all these? Or it'll still be great and I'll still love them or whatever and I'll pop them out. I have no idea.
Sure.
It's all changing.
And, I mean, you know, obviously they degrade a little slower than, like, maybe a cassette, but they are going to degrade, too. You know, and not to, again, totally pimp vinyl as a thing, because, again, I sound like an old man. But vinyl still, if you keep it in good condition, it's good to go.
Yep.
Is the vinyl still playable on your, this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Did it come, now, it came with a script, right? When you got it,
yep.
you got the full script.
It's the inside, the fold-out is
okay.
the script.
Oh, okay.
So, at least I believe that is. The case that it busted out of the frame. It's in a long frame. I'm pretty sure that the fold-out was the script. So
okay.
the front is like him in front of a curtain, the back is the mirror, and then the fold-out is the script.
Yeah.
So you would just hold that in your hand and play off of that. And I tried to look online, and I ahead of time I forwarded you photos of the script from a CD version.
Yes.
I tried to look online to see if the script was there, because I was like, I don't want to type it up.
Right.
And then I would find links to where there was supposed to be one.
Yeah, I was having the same trouble.
And you'd click on that, and then it would be like, this like Angel Fire page isn't here anymore.
I know.
So even that's like gone. So, and I can't imagine, like, at some point, no one's going to have a script version of this. Like,
yes.
very few people have a copy of it,
mm-hmm.
and like no one will be able to do the bit. No one will be able to do.
No,
they'll be guessing
mm-hmm.
what their lines are supposed to be in the Comedy Minus One bit.
Yeah, I mean, because you can probably, I'm sure you can buy this digitally, but you're missing an awful lot if you do.
Yeah,
you said it's 12 minutes, right? It's 12 minutes,
something like that. It's like unless that one has a digital booklet, which some do,
right?
But most don't.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably gone. I mean, the Rhino put out the DVD back in. The thing was from 73.
Okay.
I don't think it shows when the DVD came out, but, nope, there's also 73. But Rhino put it out on CD, so, of course, the second it did that, I snagged it,
mm-hmm.
even though I had it on, you know, vinyl, just because, why not?
Sounds gorgeous, though.
Yeah, it's pretty great restoration.
Mm-hmm.
But even, like, my Comedy Minus One, I got on a CD first, like off of eBay. Somebody just like burned a copy
yeah.
off their vinyl, and that's how I got it first before I even got the vinyl, because getting the vinyl is like really difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And the foreword in the CD liner is by Dr. Demento.
What? Really?
That's
yep. awesome.
So that's kind of cool.
That's fantastic.
You know, for people that collect his albums,
mm-hmm.
two of them. So yeah, it's just weird. There's like a few things I have in like multiple formats, and his mm-hmm. Albert stuff is one of them.
Do you did you listen to Dr. Demento growing up?
Oh yeah,
yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. I don't know if we talked about that last time, because it's one of these things. Because I grew up on the East Coast, I didn't know about him until like somebody handed me a compilation. My mom bought me a compilation.
Well, that's how I got into it. Is I got that double cassette compilation. It was like the best of Dr. Demento.
I think that's one I had to. Okay.
Yeah, that had, you know, Star Trek and by the Firm, and the Homecoming Queen's Got a Gun by Julie Brown, all that stuff. Boot to the Head, Midsummer Night Geek, all those, you know, kind of his normal tracks. That's how I got into them, and then periodically I'd find it on the radio and I could listen to it there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's a pretty amazing like life too for that guy. Oh. Like, the guy that herded up the novelty songs, like, that was his thing.
That's a collection I want to see.
Yeah.
Not the rumor. I think he actually confirmed it when he was talking to Chris Hardwick, was that he had a whole room that was all LPs, and his wife made him get rid of, like, a ton of them because it was frightening.
Right.
Yeah. I can't imagine. You know, I've met one guy doing this podcast who his record collection is somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000. All comedy records. Like, shit you've never heard of. Shit you don't want to hear of, but it's fascinating just that it exists. Like, local comedians and shit.
Right.
But yeah, Dr. Demento's is one that I'm...
Yeah, I had to, like, hide my vinyl. Like, I have, like... I don't have a lot. I think I have, like, 3 crates of it.
Okay, yeah.
And I would say, like... I don't know. I probably have, like, 30 or 40 comedy records, something like that. Nothing crazy, but a decent amount. And, you know, my record player is still out here, so I could listen to it, but... Just from a space standpoint, it's like they're just in a closet. Like, they're not totally packed away to the middle of nowhere. I can go find them if I need to.
Sure.
But they're not readily available for me to be like, I feel like listening to Stevie Wonder's Fulfillingness First Finale. Like, boom, there it is. Mm-hmm. Like, I have to, like, literally, like, okay, I go to the closet, got to dig it out, got to flip through them, figure out where it is. It's a little more of a to-do, so I tend to not to do it very often.
Right.
But every once in a while, I'll pull a crate out and just kind of start going through them, because some stuff does just sound so much better.
Have you ever had that experience with comedy? Because I'm like, that's the one thing I don't get to, like, I don't really care too much about is the sound quality, unless it's like Cheech and Chong, or actually one of these.
Yeah.
Do you care about the sound quality of the comedy stuff?
Not too much, as long as I can hear it, you know, and it's clear. Because some rips are terrible.
Yeah.
And it sounds like somebody just put a microphone up to the record player, and it's really terrible. But what's cool about the vinyl side of things is there's just so much out there that will never find its way onto anything, you know, otherwise. So, which is so weird, because you would think that, like, every Bill Cosby album would be on CD or digitally downloadable, or people that are comedy legends. And some of it is, but a lot of it isn't. And it's just, I mean, I guess some of them are pretty dated, too, if you listen to them.
Sure.
They just don't hold up at all.
Right.
But I don't know. I would think that you'd want to document that, considering so many amazing comedians came up through there, and it was a thing to release albums like that.
Yeah, and I mean, the one thing, like, I actually found out recently too is, like, well as they might keep the rarer ones, that when they disappear, they're going, I mean, if they're exposed to the, I interviewed an archaeologist a week ago who he has been studying this hippie commune up in Olympali. Do you know where that is? In Olympali State Park, up near, it's in Marin County. Marin County. And he either way, this place burned down, and one of the things that was left behind is a bunch of old records. And only one of them was a comedy record, but, like, the shape of it after 30 years in the elements was just, like, it's, like...
Shrill it up.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. So, even that's gonna... Those are gonna disappear.
Well, you would think that, and maybe there is, and I'm just not aware of it, that somebody would make it their mission to, like, digitize every single comedy record and just have them up there someplace where people can just listen to them, like, stream them.
That's what I'd love to do.
You know, like, it doesn't have to be, like, downloadable.
Right.
So, but, you know, at least a streaming archive of these things so people can at least hear them and have it documented. And I know it gets tricky because people will want money or whatever, but if it's literally just there and it's free and it's just to be listened to, so you can't pop it on, you know, your iPod or whatever. I mean, yeah, obviously there's workarounds. People find the ways to download them, but make them work for it.
Yeah.
And then link to the artist's websites or whatever.
Exactly.
At least give them that.
All right, it's time for another kooky, crazy call.
Another kooky, crazy call is a copyrighted feature.
And this time, we're calling a pet store. And I'm going to disguise my voice and attempt to purchase 10 parakeets. Let's see what happens.
Hello, House of Pets.
Yes, do you sell parakeets, there?
Yes, we do.
Excuse me, how many do you have?
I think we have 7 or 8 at the present time.
Well, I'm going to need 10.
Well, we have another store in the area, and I'm sure we could get two more from them.
I see. In other words, you'd have to go to another store then, huh?
Yes, we would.
Okay, well, let me think about it, and I'll get back to you later.
I think it would be pretty amazing, because, you know, there's things that exist like that for TV shows.
Sure.
You have those museums in New York and L.A., the, I don't know why I can't think of the name of them.
Right.
There's one in Beverly Hills, Paley Center.
Thank you.
Paley Center for Media, where you can go in and, like, watch almost any TV show on a little monitor, you know? And I remember going visiting the one in New York when I was, like, 12 or whatever and being like, you never know what you want to watch when you get in there.
Of course.
Because you have everything.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, and you kind of try to see what other people are watching. Like, oh, somebody's watching The Simpsons over there. Yeah, watch The Simpsons. But then sometimes you'll just be try to think of the most obscure thing to see if they have it. Herman's Head. They have Herman's Head? That kind of thing. But you would think that something would exist like that for all these comedy records.
I mean, people try and do it, and I've tried. But again, a lot of it is, like, download, which is cool, I guess, for an album that's not been reprinted or anything. And that
it's not available
buy commercially at all. Like, maybe used. But, I mean, even this, I mean, I was looking at this on vinyl, and most places it was like $50 a pop, which, for me, I like to buy the cheap shit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to spend $50 on an album unless it's, you know, I don't know, Jesus himself speaking on vinyl. And
it's not very funny.
No. He's not a comedian.
Yeah, not good. His timing is terrible. I think he'd be better, but...
But yeah, there are a couple websites that do that, but they don't. I think the streaming thing is probably the smartest idea. I mean, you get some people upload them to YouTube. Again, you can download YouTube shit. It's not that hard if you find the way to do it, you know. But there are a couple websites that do it, but it's mostly download stuff, and sometimes it's iffy because they'll get sued and then they have to pull them down or pull their whole collection down because one thing is up there that they didn't realize
right. Somebody
still had a copyright to.
I mean, I would love to, like, even though I would never do this because why would I?
Mm-hmm.
To open up like a comedy museum, that literally is just for all things comedy that like traces comedy through the years and there's different displays for all the different, you know, like here's the Monty Python room or whatever, that kind of stuff. And then you just do periodic installations that are like, you know, the works of Steve Martin or whatever. And
it's
like,
fantastic.
Like I think people would be into that.
I'd go to it.
I would go in a heartbeat.
I would run it. I would gladly be your assistant.
It would be amazing, but it would just be like this crazy undertaking.
Yes.
You'd have to secure everything from the artist, get permission, all that kind of stuff. But
yeah.
I just, you know, you would need like $1 million to make it happen.
Yes.
But I think it would be a good service to everybody because, like, you know, if we don't have our comedy, what do we have, to be honest?
No, I agree. Yeah.
So, and people constantly dismiss comedy, which makes me crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's just like the whole idea of that, like, oh, like, drama gets, like best actor and best supporting actor in the Globes, but comedy just gets best actor and doesn't get the other, like, or whatever. It's just like the whole thing of, like, we're just going to dismiss it, or we're going to pretend that American Hustle is a comedy, or whatever. Like,
oh, I know.
It's just makes me crazy. It's like, there's so much good comedy out there, because you don't get it, you don't understand it, you dismiss it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's why I always love that Olivia quote, dying is easy, comedy is hard, which, like, I fully agree with. Like, I'm not saying that drama is easy.
No.
I can't, like, cry on command.
Sure.
That's not my skill set.
Right.
My skill set is more the comedic mind and the comedic timing. You know, that's what I think I'm pretty good at, you know? Not to toot my own horn or whatever, but I just feel like I've been doing it for a long time. I think I understand comedy or the beats of it or the science of it, because there is a science to comedy, which is just a different science than drama. And I just really wish people didn't devalue comedy as much as it is. It's like, oh, it's a trifle, you know?
Right.
It's not important.
Right.
It's like, I think if we're not able to laugh, like, how will we get through life, to be honest?
I mean, that's the thing. It's like, it can function as a trifle. It can be one of those things that you don't have to think about. But when you do think about it, it's fucking complex. And that's the problem, is that they don't separate the two. That one can just be an entertainment, but if you want to look deeper into it, you can.
Yeah.
There's plenty back.
I mean, there's a big difference between, like, a Preston Sturges comedy and then, like, one of those terrible parody movies that are just referential now, like epic movies, scary, like all those things that literally just, like, if we just show somebody dressed as Shrek, and then people will be like, I remember Shrek, that's a joke. No, it's not a joke. There needs to be more to that. But so there's definitely high comedy, low comedy, or whatever. And, you know, you can debate whether Airplane is a better comedy than Sullivan's Travels or not. Like, it just depends on your taste. I think they're both brilliant, and actually I would pick Airplane every day of the week, because it makes me laugh harder than Sullivan's Travels does, but they're both brilliant. They're just different. different.
Yeah.
And it's this the same thing in drama too. You know, The Godfather Part Two is very different than Gorillas in the Mist, you know? So not to say it just for, you know, quality level, but just, you know, comedies, just, there's all sorts of different kinds. And, you know, with our festival that we run, like, we curate for SF Sketchfest just stuff we like. Like,
yeah.
We don't, no offense to Dane Cook, or offense to Dane Cook, I don't care. But we're not going to book him because he's not our taste. Like,
right.
We're, but billions of people love him.
Sure.
He would fill an amphitheater if we got him.
Of course.
But there's just a certain, like, level of comedy or kind of comedy we want to book because we like it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to say any comedy is good or any comedy is bad. It's all in the eye of the beholder. If it makes you laugh, then it's good for you.
Right.
That's fantastic. Some people think Benny Hill's the funniest thing in the history of the world.
Yeah.
Other people just think it's naked ladies and for 2 hours. So, I don't know. But whatever floats your boat, so to speak, is if it gives you some levity and gives you a break from what's often very hard for people to get through, then great.
I mean, and that's the thing, too, is that if it's going to be an art festival, you don't need to give him any more exposure, or certain things, any more exposure. And you could still arguably give the state more exposure. You could still arguably give Paul F. Tompkins more time.
Yep.
You know, there's nothing wrong with that. I think there's some value to that.
If people are doing stuff that you think is next level, or you think is funny, or just aren't getting out there enough, just try to tell people about it. Share it.
Yeah.
There's certain comics I absolutely love that are starting to blow up, and I'm excited for, like, Ron Funches, I think, is one of the funniest comics in the world, and he's starting to blow up, which is so great. I love it when you see somebody who should be hugely famous and is starting to be hugely famous.
Yeah.
And it was the same thing for me in music. Like, my favorite band is The Frames, which is Glenn Hansard's band, and he did Once, you know, he's the dude in Once, and that whole thing with Swell Season. And, like, I used to go and see him at small clubs here, like the old Largo.
Okay.
Places like that. And now he's, like, playing the Hollywood Bowl. And you know, those places, and like, it's great because he blew up, which is fantastic after being in a band for 25 years and you know, being famous in Ireland but not here. So every once in a while somebody does, like, go from the bottom to the top that deserves it, and you're like, oh my god, it actually happened. Whereas most quality stuff doesn't.
No,
it might float to the top a little bit, you know, or get some notoriety or just enough to have them keep doing it, but so little of that can actually go mainstream or big enough in order to, like, really carve out a living.
Well, I mean, that's why SF Sketchfest, like other things, is it's like your own independent curation of what's important to you. You know, I mean, it doesn't have to be, again, I love the idea of a comedy museum. I'm totally on board for it. But, like, at the very least, you're doing something that is curating it year by year by year by year. Is its own, like, archaeological layer.
Yeah. Know? Yeah, every year is very different. And, like, people ask us, like, what our plan is. We're like, we don't have a plan.
Yeah.
We, like, we go out there and, like, we know that we're going to try to do 100-plus shows over our 3 weeks. And they're, like, from small up-and-coming sketch and stand-ups to massive stars. It's just a matter of, like, what do we like? Who do we know? Or who do we not know, but someone we know knows that can help us get in the door? Because we're still grassroots in a lot of ways, even though it's a big thing now.
Yeah.
It's still run by three people plus a small staff.
Awesome.
So we don't have that pressure of a massive sponsor or whatever. There's not, like, you know, Toyota's... SF Sketchfest or whatever, where we're required to ask the comics to be like, okay, great, you're going to do this thing, they're going to record it, we also need you to go drive around in a Toyota truck for 30 minutes and talk about how much you love the Toyota truck. Which you see all the time now. Like, and I don't, you know, sponsorship's great, and if Toyota threw $1 million at us, we'd probably be asking comics to ride in a Toyota truck for 30 minutes, because you know, it's still, we still are trying to, like, pay our rents and feed our families or whatever, and it's hard to, like, it's amazing that we managed to carve out a living curating comedy, which we absolutely adore, which is fantastic, but it's not like I don't have a Scrooge McDuck swimming pool out back full of money to take a bath in. And we're always very, like, we do get some people pitching us on sponsorship that we don't think are a good fit, and we'll be like, no, sorry, because our image is everything to us.
Sure.
So we're really careful with that. But I notice it a lot now. Like, I mean, I've always been sort of aware of it in movies and TV, but, like, it's gotten so out of hand that, like, I love New Girl. I think it's a very funny show, but, like, Ford Focus or whatever is one of their things, it's constantly, like, they'll write scenes where they're, like, talking about Fords or whatever, and, like, it's funny, but, like, you just know that, like, they're only doing it because this is allows them to be on the air, and so, like, I allow them that because that's what makes it so I can watch New Girl. If 5 minutes of them is talking about a Ford, it might feel kind of dirty, but at the end of the day, I guess I gotta let them do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's still not 50s advertising where it was way more fucking obvious. Although, to be fair, they would just take a break with the character. Character would give you a separate commercial from the plot.
There and then they'd go back to the show.
Yeah. I'd be curious to see if they could still do that.
Yeah, it would be pretty great.
It'd be great.
All of a sudden, they just broke away. I guess they sort of do that every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, hey, it's Kiefer Sutherland.
Yeah.
When I'm driving around L.A. on 24, somehow getting from the east side to the west side in 15 minutes, I'm in my Dodge Durango or whatever.
Yeah, that's about right.
My name is Leroy Williams. I'm from any ghetto you choose. You jail all your black.
Thank you. Hal Carter. I lived the last 75 years in Michigan. I was born there. I'm 75 years old.
While we stand here waiting for the ball game to start, let's give thanks for our home and our two-car garage. Let's give thanks for TV. Thank you. Let's give thanks. Thank you. Thank you.
Do you think, it's an obvious question. We've probably talked about it before, too. Again, it's been a while, but, is collecting for you, are you fulfilling something similar to what you're fulfilling by curating it in the Sketchfest?
Yeah, I guess, sort of. I mean, my wife loves it and hates it at the same time, because she knows, I'm a collector. My dad is, too. He has tons of, books and movies and DVDs and stuff. But it also comes out of the fact that I worked at an indie video store for 10 years,
sure.
and I created tons of director's sections there, and this is back when it was VHS, and then DVD came in at the tail end of me being there. But there was times where we would go to this little warehouse in Sacramento that was kind of when video stores would close, they would buy the inventory, ship them there, and then people would buy them piecemeal from them or whatever. But they would let us go, me and my boss and, one of the other employees. We would go, and we'd have, 3 hours, or we'd look around, and we would just, fill up carts of VHS. They were just alphabetical or whatever, and then it would be, $10 a piece or whatever. We could take whatever.
Okay.
But they would just have all sorts of stuff, so it was like a treasure hunt.
That's amazing.
So we would pop through, and, I was trying to, get every Alan Arkin movie or whatever, and, oh, my God, Choo Choo and the Philly Flash. It's a terrible movie, but you can't find it. It's in the big clamshell, and, that kind of stuff. So it would be, the best thing ever.
That's
you would just
awesome.
Be, scanning these things, and you'd find shit that you've been looking for forever that either you couldn't find or was $100 on eBay or something, and it would just be there, and it was just the most amazing thing ever. And there's just something amazing about just finding those things and recognizing this is a thing that I've been looking for years. I don't know why it matters to me that much that I have this subpar movie from their catalog, but it really does, because now I've got everything available or whatever. It's just, I don't know what it is. It's just something I've always done and always enjoyed. And, my collection here, it isn't broken down by directors or whatever, but it is alphabetical, so I can find things.
Of course.
And there is, all the TVs together, all the Criterions together.
Sure.
And then the rest of the movies are just A through Z. Blu-rays are separated from normal DVDs or whatever.
Yeah.
But, I often want to curate it even more, but it's this is fine.
Yeah.
I don't need to rearrange it even further, but... I don't know. It's just one of those things. I have a very encyclopedic brain for movies and TV, primarily movies, where, it's almost Rain Man-ish at times, and people either find it, amusing or scary.
Mm-hmm.
And when I do improv, which I do a lot of, I'm very referential with my comedy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have to be, but I like it.
Sure.
So there was a while there that I really tried to push away from it.
Mm-hmm.
But then now I'm like, whatever. Some jokes I just do for me, knowing they're not going to land, or they're going to land with four people in the crowd that understand what the reference is. But I don't base an entire scene around it.
Sure.
It'll just be a throwaway. We did something in the other show I did the other night where our monologue was Mackenzie Astin, and he told a story that Sean Astin had told him about Goonies on the set there. So I was like, oh, it was the pirate ship from Goonies or whatever. So then we just did this scene where I was going through a warehouse full of prop from mediocre movies.
Uh-huh.
So it was just me, like, just randomly pulling up stuff, like, oh, there's the sled from the Gun and Betty Lou's handbag. There's, like, just trying to, like, pick just weird stuff. And then everybody else in this is like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. And then one character's like, wait, what? That's... You don't have the DeLorean from Back to the Future? No, but I have the truck, the Jeep that Biff is waxing in the future when they come back, like that kind of stuff.
That's awesome. Because
that's just fun to me. So like that kind of stuff is just like piled away in my brain, and I pushed out anything really useful.
Sure,
I can't tell you that much about politics or whatever, but to me that's way more like useful to me.
Yeah, of course.
To have that stockpile of useless movie and TV and comedy knowledge, then
I'm really jealous of your knowledge of like character actors. That shit blows my mind, because you'll know somebody, you know, whenever I listen to your show, you'll know somebody. I'm like, who the fuck is he? Then you'll describe them. I'll know exactly who you're talking about. I just wish I had that appreciation for it. That's
something I wish people had more appreciation for character actors, because character actors are the ones that make stuff interesting. The leads are fine, and they're good, but it's the guy that can come in and do something amazing with three scenes that I think is absolutely amazing. They carve out their living doing that, like the Steven Roots of the world are like amazing.
He's my hero.
Steven Tobolowsky, like those guys are the best, and they're so good, and they're so professional, and they come in and they work for 3 days on something and that's it. But they're always noteworthy and they're always memorable. And I had always, as an actor, because I sort of am that still, but when I was coming out as an actor, I was like, look, I'm not going to be like Superman. I'm not going to be the fresh face hunk, whatever, like, but I'm not quite weird looking enough to be like the Max Casella and Doogie Howser, you know? So I'm somewhere in between, but my whole thing is like, all right, well then let's think about like, what's my niche going to be? What would be my character thing? Like, I'd like to get enough work that way that people go, oh, look, that guy. They don't know to know my name.
100%.
But if I can be a that guy, then in my opinion, I've made it.
Definitely.
Like, that's important to me.
Commercials seem to do that for people quicker now, but I mean, I don't know if that's...
Yeah.
Might have been the case more a few years ago. But
definitely. And they also tend to use like the same 8 people now in these spots.
That's also true.
Because now the client thinks that person's famous because they recognize them immediately. So they book them to do it. I've seen some of this. Same people that I've been on auditions with for years that just constantly like book everything. And you're like, oh, there's Nate again. There's so-and-so again. And it's amazing for them.
Sure.
But yeah, it's pretty crazy.
Also, I mean, I guess it's satisfying paycheck-wise. Because I mean, I do know people who have bought their houses using their residuals and commercials, period. It's all commercial money.
If you can get a campaign, if you're Stephanie Courtney and you're Flo from the Progressive commercials, you're sitting on it. Like, and I actually did a Verizon commercial many years ago, and the Verizon dude, the Can You Hear Me Now guy, was on it. And I was talking to him about it, and I was like, well, how does it feel? You've been doing this for years. And he's like, well, it's mixed blessing. Like, it's great because I have a house in LA, I have a house in New York. Like, that's fantastic. He's like, but I can't get arrested on anything but commercials. I can't get a part in a movie because they go, you're the Can You Hear Me Now guy. Like, he's like, hey, it makes me crazy. He was concentrating more on doing theater and trying to like write his own and direct his own indie films or whatever. Because he's like, because no one's going to hire him. He could be perfect for the part, but they just look at him and they go like, oh yeah, you're the Can You Hear Me Now guy.
Yeah.
Like,
that blows.
It's just tough. It's like, it's a mixed blessing. It's like, do you want, like, he's well off. So it takes care of that side of life.
Sure.
But it stifles you creatively, at least from the standpoint of like moving over to movies and TV, which is what he really wants to do. So it's, and I know most people just roll their eyes and they're like, I work in a coal mine for 7 days a week or whatever. And I get that. And it's almost like I don't understand why bands get pissed off when they're asked to play their one hit. Like, that makes me crazy. It's like, look, it paid for your mansion. You're doing a 2-hour show. Play your one hit and then play whatever the hell else you want.
Seriously.
But don't do the fans disservice because they're the ones that put you where you are.
Right. Yeah.
And some people forget that, and that makes me crazy.
Definitely. That's an interesting thing we talk about on the podcast a few times, is that comedy isn't that way. Although people want to maybe see it. Comedians obviously don't necessarily have a thing to go back on anymore. It's not bits. It's not vaudeville the way.
Yeah, not so much. It's like, if you're Monty Python, you don't do the parrot sketch. People might be pissed off or whatever. But if you're David Cross, they're not going to be like, do that bit about baseball or whatever that you used to in your act. Very rarely, you know?
Yeah.
So yeah, I guess there is that. As long as you just keep changing your material, people won't care.
I feel like we got sidetracked from the album a little bit.
Possible.
I liked our conversation about, because again, this is, it's fitting because this is not an easy album to find, but the CD is probably fairly easy to find. if you're going to recommend this to people, again, Stars Bought is maybe more a complete album, but why would you recommend this to somebody who doesn't know Albert Brooks or just has never heard it before?
Well, I mean, it's a really great introduction into what who Albert was as a comedian. His voice is still very much in the movies that he writes and stuff. But it's interesting in the fact that it is a little bit of everything. It's a little bit of stand-up, a little bit of sketch, that kind of stuff, too. But it's just like that the National Anthem bit still holds up 40 years after it came out.
Yeah.
It didn't date itself at all. There's nothing in it that makes you go, I don't get this.
Right.
What was that reference? It's just really funny and clever and great. And the Minus You thing is just really like a goofy, fun idea. Like, it's not the funniest part of an album by any way, shape, or form, but it's just really kind of a cool idea. And just hearing the stuff that he can do, it's just a good intro to him, I think.
Yeah.
I mean, track them both down. They're both pretty amazing. But the National Anthem bit, and you can see him doing it live on Flip Wilson, I think it's online, too. It's slightly different than the album version, but it's such a fantastic bit, and it's really, really funny.
He's the only guy from this era that I know of, any comedian period, that had these two great experimental albums and did no others.
Yeah.
It's kind of, 73, I mean, that's kind of mind-blowing. This is at the height of this kind of stuff, and, you know, great for him. It is great for him, but I feel like another album would have been fantastic, and, I say we just start a petition to make him do a new album.
There you go, Albert. And, get on it, man.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, people should definitely check it out. And then, you know, find the script online, which it took me forever to find another version, because I could read most of what you sent me, but there were a couple of things I couldn't read. So I found it, but it took forever. It took me like an hour.
Could imagine. I searched for a while, and I was like, I'll type this up. And I was like, wait, I'll just take a photo of my phone.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Because look at the idea of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing that's cool about it, too, is, like, he was not even that conventional of a stand-up when he did do stand-up. Yep. I mean, he's telling stories or whatever, but he would do bits.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the best thing ever. When I do stand-up, I do bits.
I
don't do traditional, like, what's the deal with airline food? Mm-hmm. I do bits. And, like, to me, I think that's... I appreciate that approach. And that's why it lent himself so well to going on Carson. And he was one of Johnny's favorite guests, because he would always do a bit, like a funny bit. He had this Speak and Spell thing, which is on, like, the Best of Carson DVDs or whatever. That's, like, brilliant. Like, he's, like, a ventriloquist dummy. It's just a Speak and Spell upside down with, like, arms on it and hands. And he'd be like, hey, buddy, how you doing? Okay. Great, buddy. And... so you have a girlfriend? Yes. What did you give her for her birthday? XKE. Oh, a Jaguar. What did she give you? VD. Oh, buddy. It's like this great bit. Like, he would do stuff like that. It's so funny. And Johnny would just die.
Yeah.
And you could tell, like, he's a comedian's comedian in that standpoint, because his stuff's not always going to play great with an audience.
Right.
But if you understand what he's trying to do and can see the different levels of it, it's absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, look up his Tonight Show clips if you can find them, because they're almost all really good. He did a bunch of impressions that you can do with different food, and it's great. It's just like, you put two lemon slices in your cheeks, you can do Brando, things like that. It's just, it's so good, it's so unique and different. And there's a little bit of that on this album.
I like when there's an album that gives somebody a snapshot of who somebody was before they became who the fuck they are now. Like, that's why Steve Martin albums, same reason they're so fucking wonderful.
Yep.
They're a little more free and young and trying shit. I love that. Okay, so Pop My Culture Podcast.
Yep.
What's the Twitter for Pop My Culture?
It's at PMC Podcast.
That's right. Okay, and then you on Twitter. Are you just Cole Stratton?
I'm just at Cole Stratton.
All right, easy enough. Yep. Well, thank you for doing this.
Yeah, again. Thanks, Jason. Thanks for having me.
And thank you guys for listening. And as always, have a good thing.
Comedy on Vinyl is a production of Stolen Dress Entertainment. It is produced by Mike Warden and is hosted and edited by Jason Klom. Our theme song was composed and performed by Richard Levinson. Please visit StolenDress.com to listen to our other podcasts, read our blogs, read our tweets, watch our videos, and read our books. Please subscribe on iTunes, and if you like us, give us a 5-star rating and a nice review. You can find us on Facebook.com/ComedyOnVinyl, Twitter at ComedyOnVinyl, and find everything else at ComedyOnVinyl.com.
A special guest comedian will be coming on stage, and you will be able to have dialogue with him.
Mr. Rooks?
Yes.
Showtime, sir.
Thank you. Well, I don't know about you, but I'm beginning to get nervous. Good luck. Break a leg. The next time I speak to you, we'll be on stage.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. The Royal Hotel's Majestic Room is proud to present the comedy team of Albert and you.
Thank you, and good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Albert. Wait a minute. How could you be me? No, you didn't. I said I was Albert, and you said you were me. Now I'm confused. I think we should get on with this.